This is To Your Health with Dr. Chad Kingsley, Mojave County Public Health Director, and Roger Galloway. To Your Health keeps you informed on all the health issues facing our country. Be healthy. Stay healthy. Here's To Your Health.
Welcome to Your Health. I'm Roger Galloway, and of course, here with us is the subject of the show, and that is Dr. Chad Kingsley, who is the director of the Mojave County Health Department. Today, we're going to be talking about, I think, something that's very much in the news, and we'll be talking about other things as well, but right now, rabies, that has been there. We had a second fox that we thought might also have rabies. We had one, and we had a press release out on that. What happened regarding the second fox?
Yeah, and just to preface that, so I'll be using this word, so vectors. So and that's the general term that you're going to use anywhere across the United States. So a vector is just any living creature that can pass an infection to another living creature. So that's when it can be from like a tick to a mosquito to a fox. So any of those things, flies. So all those things are vectors. They can carry a disease from one. They either transmit it or they carry it, you know, and do it. Technically, humans are vectors too, right? When we get the flu and if we give it to somebody,
that's true.
We're a vector. Yeah. So as I said, that's just basically what a vector is. But looking at this, the foxes. We did have a second case, which prompted a second release because we didn't actually have the animal. So anytime you have with rabies, you have to actually have the animal to be tested. So you have to actually have brain matter. You can't just do it from blood or anything to that effect. So we have to have the carcass or the animal to test it. Then we send it and get tested. So on the second one, there was a second attack on somebody's pet. Both of these past two instances with foxes involves people's pets. You know, and that's... We definitely don't want foxes going after people, which they previously did, but also, you know, pets are important to people and stuff, and they do live in rural communities, and there's coyotes that go after animals and such things, so with that second one, we couldn't be sure exactly what it was, so we just wanted to be extra safe with the community and made sure that they were advised on it. So we sent out that second one. We haven't found anything yet. With it, the animal that in the second attack, the pet did have very severe injuries and did have to be put down because of the injuries, the severity of the injuries, and the owner did consent for that animal to be tested, and it did come up negative, so that was a good thing.
The brain tissue is what they look at to determine whether. Do you know what it is that they see or what they?
Yeah, so it's just so rabies is an interesting virus. Some people call it a zombie virus, but it infects the nervous system, and it's one of those viruses that because of the nervous system, it hides inside the nerve cells. You can't really kill it. It's a challenge. Now, we do have a vaccine for it that is effective both in animals as well in humans with it. But you can't see it in the normal nerve cells. You can only see it in the brain cells. So they have to take it, put it under a slide, and they'll see the actual change in the cell that shows that there's a rabies. What the virus does to the cell, they can see.
So that vaccination would have saved Old Yeller.
It would have, yes, you know, oh, yeah, so I don't know if the younger generation, you know, this brings up...
They won't even know the movie.
You know, people hear rabies and stuff, and a lot of people might know it, but I'm sure there's enough people out there that, Old Yeller, and even me traumatized, you know, and that dog being put down. So, and that's a great point, is that, you know, we've seen, and there's not as much Western movies watched anymore, but that was always a thing in the old Western movies about somebody getting rabies and somebody getting tied up, you know, and what it did to humans, too. You know, and it, same thing, and it would cause people to attack, and that's what the virus does. It makes them, it takes away fear. That's why a fox will go after anything in the middle of the day and approach people. That's abnormal behavior because usually they're nocturnal.
Right.
And so it causes them to go to attack. It also makes you what's called hydrophobic. You don't drink water. So it literally makes a person thirsty, but that's why they foam at the mouth because it's transmitted in saliva. Oh, and so, you know, so it's always kind of, viruses are fascinating things, but, you know, so it does that, and that's why, so that's also, so if animals are also outside, and, you know, maybe a fox would come along and bite it or scratch it, if it licks its paws, it can be on the paws because of the saliva, and it scratches it, then that could be transmitted, and the owner might not know, and then that animal is licking the owner, and, you know, and such things, and so a few days down the road before the behavior starts to change. None of those cases has happened, but it's not a, you know, it's a possibility that could. So that's just why we wanted the advisement out there. It's really just to protect as best we can people that they're aware. And so over the next month, in month and a half, you know, especially this, it pops up and it's rabies can, has been around since the Old West, you know, so it's just something we have to watch for.
Is the treatment for a human that's been bitten by a rabid fox or a rabid coyote, is that still as horrible as it used to be? I mean,
no, they used to be like 20 injections within the stomach. No, it's still a smaller series and still an injection like a vaccine, but it's not like it used to be. It used to be over like 20 shots in the abdomen and was rather painful. But no, but the treatment is after a bite to have as soon as possible the prophylaxis delivered. So going to the hospital and having that shot. So, yeah. And then for our workers here that work in animal control, we have animal control. There's Arizona Fish and Game. And really, Arizona Fish and Game is one that polices our natural areas. And they're the ones that go look for the fox and such things. That's we don't handle that. That's Arizona Fish and Game. But they're the ones that go and monitor. They get kind of like the flu shot for rabies, you know. It is costly, but it's a preventative one. They do get that. But it's not a regular series that we give to, that's normal, part of our normal vaccine series that everyone gets.
So that fox, the rabid fox, was that fox an anomaly, do you think? Or are there other cases out there, many cases out there?
You know, so in historical-wise, usually where you see it at is in foxes, coyotes, skunks and bats. And that's usually kind of where you see them. Mammals are the its preferred host. In Mojave County, we were the last county in all of Arizona to ever to have rabid foxes. So all the other counties have had it, except for us. And Coconino was one of the last ones that Flagstaff that kind of really reported it about 3 or 4 years ago. So this is just migration of the foxes from one area to another, slowly transmitting it. So it's here. You know, can always kind of pop up with it. Historically here, the only other cases we've had is in bats, and that is, but we've never had bats, rabid bats in Kingman, but we've had them in Bullhead and Lake Havasu over the last 20 years. So this is actually one of the first really recorded rabid cases. There were two cases, confirmed cases in December, November, and this is our third one that was confirmed here in May that we had. So
what kind of warning would you give to people who are camping in the Wallapais and maybe they brought their small dog along with them for whatever reason? Obviously, still stay away from the foxes, but be alert and more wary.
Just alert and aware, and then at nighttime, just have the dog sleep inside the tent, and during the day and stuff. And then if you do see it, you know, see a dog fox kind of approaching, you know, the dog might be initial to go after it or like that. If you can, just get away as much as you can and from it. And the biggest thing, too, on animals for your dogs is just make sure they're up to date on their vaccines and their boosters. And they're usually fine. The one animal that was attacked by a fox and confirmed a rabid, they had the dog had its shots. It was due for its booster like that month. It's been an observation and it's been fine. So, because it has its vaccines and because it was vaccinated and such things, so it'll be under quarantine. You know, by an observation and for like 120 days. But usually, it can show up in the first 3 to 5 days symptoms, and the animal's been okay since then. So,
yeah, we talked a little bit earlier about pigeons.
Yeah,
right. What is the situation and problem?
So, you know, pigeons. Everyone has them. You know, and everybody has an aunt or an uncle that likes to throw food out for them or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Pigeons do carry disease, you know.
What kind of disease do they carry normally?
You don't have to go look it up. People call them the flying rats, but they can have avian flu. They can have just minor bacterial infections. The specifics I have to look. Off the top of my head, I don't know.
Mike Tyson said they were very clean animals.
They can be, and that's why I don't want to overspeak too much. But they're also a nuisance in the sense also, not just for carrying disease, but when you feed them, then they tend to be in that area, and then they tend to try to roost on roofs. And yes. Especially with solar systems being more popular on top of homes, they can just destroy a solar system. If they roost underneath it or they get underneath and to clean it out, is a horrible, horrible mess. And I would definitely recommend, this is not my area, but if you put it in solar, you put the little fences around it. But that's the thing. So if you feed them, then they're going to tend to stay in that area. And, you know, it can affect roofing. They will try to nest anywhere. Yeah. So that's also the reason why we don't feed pigeons, because it also destroys properties. You know, and stuff. So that's a control vector. So not only that, you know, we want to control any type of disease that a pigeon might have. And they are, most like most animals, they have self-grooming. They take care of themselves. But it's also just what it does to cities. And pigeons are very destructive when it comes to private property, roofs and such things. So
it's against the law.
It's against the law. We have an ordinance, yeah.
But you mentioned there's no penalty.
Yeah.
What does that mean exactly?
So in the past, we had a penalty. You know, we would issue a warning. Okay, you've been observed. So anytime we get a complaint, and it can't be anonymous, you know, the person's put in their name, we will go to that person, and if the environmental health specialist will have to visually see them feeding or evidence of it, then they'll issue a warning that due to city ordinance, please discontinue feeding a pigeon. And there's some individuals that just, it's my way or the highway, and so they're like, no, but their neighbors don't like it, and, you know, so then it causes those issues and roosting and different problems. And so in the past, there was a penalty. Say, like, okay, with a second warning, you'll have $100 and have to come fine. And it's usually a monetary. And so we are going to have to revisit that.
Is there a reason it was taken away?
You know, historically, I can't remember. I'd have to go look at it. And I think it was just a changeover of the ordinance or if I ever had it with it. There are certain, you know, abatement. That is where we have to go and clean up trash. You know, and that's actually been in the Board of Supervisors for a little bit. It's just an abatement thing where it's, you know, you have to go in, you give a warning, it's not correct, and we have to follow civil penalties, you know.
So in other words, just to be clear.
It's an infraction. It's like like a speeding ticket.
But if there's no penalty, in other words, right now, if they're warned not to do it, and they say, I'm going to keep doing it anyway, and they come back again and say, we warned you, but I'm going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
One, that's documented, right? So it's documented, and then eventually a civil case could be taken, you know, or anything to that effect, by the neighbors, a lawsuit, anything to that effect. So it's documented, you know, so it's not worth anything. It just usually when you have a fine, then it sinks in a little bit easier. I think we all don't want to pay fines. So
that's going to possibly come up again.
That might be coming up to address that.
Bring the fine back.
Yeah, you know, it's... You know, they always say in where you work, there's always one person behind a policy. There's always one person behind an ordinance. You know, and it's just really respect. We live in a community. We live around other people. And, you know, we have to have ways to be able to, you know, have decorum, I would say.
All
so
right.
Appropriate as best as possible.
Anything
so.
Else we should talk about along these lines right now, what we've just been talking about?
So that's just the pigeons, just to be aware of it. So don't feed pigeons. Especially for respect of property and within our city limits. With animals, just be aware of foxes. Watch your animals, especially over the next few months. It's not something, it's a wild population that we are always going to have to watch, you know, and be vigilant over on those points. And then the next I would say is just, you know, another vector that really plagues us here in Mojave is mosquitoes.
I was going to turn to that. And the fogging that takes place. Usually over in Mojave Valley, there's an area over there.
Yep.
How effective is it anyway, is the fogging?
It's effective in the moment. What we've done is not so much reactive, so we set out traps, and these traps are usually about 24 hours, and they can get a good few pounds of mosquitoes. They have a little bit of piece of dry ice in them, has the carbon dioxide, it sucks them in, and then we collect. But when we see a trap that's really full, we know there's a lot of adults. Mm. And so the fogging is for adults, you know, so for the adult mosquitoes. And it's really, that's when we get the complaints in, people are getting bitten. So the fogging is good to reduce the adult population, and then if those adults there's hopefully killing those adults will mean they breed less or lay eggs less, hopefully. But I can't always guarantee that. And it also reaches those middle of those fields, you know, those square mile fields that we fog on the street, but that's just going to be, you know, it only has a radius of like 10, 20, 10, 15 feet. So you're not going to reach the middle of the field. So that fogging reaches a wider area. And so, and the pesticide they use is safe. It's from the chrysanthemum flower. And it it affects, you know, it, so it's not any type of pathogen or any type of poison, like towards immune, if towards nervous systems or anything, or the old DDT. Remember, they used to, it's an older generation, but you'd be driving down the street. Remember, kids used to play in it. They'd drive around the trucks and they had these big foggers, and kids would run behind them and they'd shoot it at it, you know, and the things we all survived, you know, and I didn't have that, but you know, that with our one generation survived that, you know, but with it, and we've learned from stuff like this. This is just it's a natural type of pesticide. It washes, the sun degrades it within an hour, within a 24 hours, and it's off a normal flower, so it's something that is there. It's effective in the moment to decrease the adult population, but we have been doing for the past 2 years studying, and we know the problem areas, and it deals a lot with aggregation, agriculture, and how they flood fields.
So there is a lot of that going on in that area.
Yeah, Mojave Valley. So and that comes, you know, that comes with, you know, if you farm, you get insects, you know, and so if you water, you can get mosquitoes. And so it's still standing clear water, and it also depends the type of soil. If it's clay, then that water will tend to sit there and not absorb into the ground and creates a great area for it. So we know certain areas that have gotten, like that's what we've done, and we go put pellets, and it actually kills the larva in the water. So it actually helps reduce it. And we've actually had a lot of reduction, significant reduction by doing that. But you're always going to have certain times, you know, unexpected rainstorms or unexpected floodings. They rotate crops, and so they water different each time. So we always have to, it's an ongoing thing that we have to do. And mosquitoes can transmit diseases. They have a West Nile virus. We don't have haven't had a malaria case here, but dengue is one that we really always want to keep off. And that we've had reported cases in Arizona. It's called the bone break disease. It's not a fun disease. It's very treatable, but it's very painful. People feel like their bones are broken.
Oh,
and then the first time you get it, you don't know it. It's actually the second time you get it that your body has reaction and all your platelets get depleted. So you usually have to have a transfusion of platelets, and it feels like your bones just ache, all your bones. So it's not a fun. It's been moving up from South America, and it's just hitting the United States. It's called dengue. So it's probably something that we might not see for a good another 5-10 years, but it's a possibility. Right now, it's the West Nile virus that we're looking for, and we have identified that in mosquitoes. We've never had a case yet, though. So,
do you get responses from the residents of the Mojave Valley area that say that fogging worked? I noticed there's a lot less, or no, or they say no. You know, I got bitten last night.
You know, that's the thing. We never get thanked for the bite that doesn't happen. We never get thanked for it.
So
we get plenty of notices when people are getting bit. You know, like, I can't even go out my door without being attacked. We hear that. Once it's fogged and they're gone, it's crickets. We don't even hear a phone call like, hey, I don't have any mosquitoes, thank you. But that just comes with the territory. We understand it. If we're not getting any calls, it's almost like a thank you, right? You know, if we're not getting complaints, then hey, we've been doing something right. So I think that's it. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's these vectors that we have, and these are common ones that we see here in the desert and animals and such thing. And birds, you know, outside of pigeons, birds do transmit avian flu. So we're always watching if suddenly we see a big die-off of birds, because we have birds that migrate between here and there and such things.
Have you seen that kind of thing?
A few times, and a lot of times, and that's where fish and game comes in. If they find dead birds, they'll send them in for testing, and they'll identify if it's West Nile virus or avian flu. And the avian flu, you know, so recently I know in Bullhead City, they were passing an ordinance for chickens, working towards, I believe, getting chickens in their backyards or changing some type of ordinance. And that was a concern, because larger populations of poultry, domesticated poultry in someone's backyard, people are concerned, well, the larger populations, commercials, were having die-offs because of the avian flu. The smaller backyard ones usually don't get reached. It's not an issue. We haven't ever really seen cases of avian flu. overly, you know, or that, and I can't say 100% confirm that, but it's such a smaller population. When you get those large commercial industries or chicken, they really get affected by avian flu. But we see it in our migratory birds and such things, and mosquitoes bite them, and then the mosquitoes bite humans, you know. So the mosquito is really the vector that transmits one thing to another or infects, you know. Mosquitoes bite horses, they bite any animal and stuff, so when they get blood. So that's just something that's just always what we do in public health is to monitor. There's some things like mosquitoes we're more hands-on, and other things Arizona Game and Fish or Animal Control is more on that we don't. We really do the contact tracing and make sure people get their immunizations and they're getting the correct treatment when it gets reported. And sometimes things aren't reported to us, so we're always trying to quality improve, make sure that hospitals and clinics and doctors are following the right when certain diseases come up are reporting. Now, rabies isn't reported actually in hospitals. So somebody comes in and they say they've been bitten, you know, they can, and if they don't have proof, they can get the treatment, the prophylaxis for it and stuff like
and
that.
And how long does that treatment take for them if they come?
Once they got it, you got it. It's that one-time treatment or whatever, then they're covered. But then they're still monitored. You know, they're told monitor your symptoms, X, Y, Z, and do the right stuff and like that. But we don't get a notice here letting us know. There's other diseases that are more spreadable that we get, sexually transmitted diseases and other diseases that we get reports on that we know is in the community. But not all diseases are reported to us. So we eventually find out because it is reported eventually to the state, and they collect the data, but it's delayed. So,
Do you get reports of a species of bug or whatever that might show up that hasn't before? Like, I lived for 19 years in the Lake Havasu City area, and all of a sudden, these past months, these very tiny, I mean, you can virtually not see them.
Yep, no seams.
They bite like mosquitoes.
Yep.
Maybe they are mosquitoes.
The little black flies, and they're different. Yeah. I know up north they've been having issues with black flies that bite. They're like a mini horsefly. If you've ever been bitten by a horsefly, those things are horrible.
Oh, they are, yeah.
You know, around here, those things are big, too. I remember running as a kid from them and stuff, but they're like they're the same species, but they're really small.
Really tiny, yeah.
Any bug that bites you and causes blood, because usually they inject saliva because the saliva has an anticoagulant because they want the blood to flow.
Yeah.
And that's where the viruses are and such things. So they do. Bugs follow animals. Bugs follow animals. Bugs follow humans, especially the biting ones. So it could have either migrated or they kind of already been there. And there's, you know, sometimes years you don't have them. Sometimes you do, you don't. I know back east they have chiggers.
Yeah, sure.
I never knew what chiggers were, and I went back east, and I sat in a grass field once, and for a whole week, I'm like, I did not know what was going on with my body, you know. But it's just interesting. In other areas of this of the United States, you have different problems, you know, and stuff here. And these are our problems, you know. And so we have ticks, you know, deer ticks here, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, you know, hantavirus comes now and then in the news. That's from usually.
Is that the kind of tick that gets into dogs? You know, in our area,
they can get on animals. Usually, hunters you'll see a lot more with people that are out in the wild around deer and animals and such things.
They can get them.
Humans. Yeah. So you can. So you get Rocky Mountain spotted fever from that. That's the most common what people know, and that's usually the ticks here that we have.
Yeah.
Mouse droppings is hantavirus when it dries and people clean. There hasn't been a lot of cases. There's a California one with the dust, valley fever. That tends to. That's also from animal droppings that gets that. People that deal with rabbits, tularemia. You know, a lot of people don't hear that one, but that's people skin and stuff. You know, so there's each animal out there can have something. So it's always just kind of being aware of it. And usually people that are in that field or hunters or whatever, they're kind of aware sometimes of that stuff or whatever.
But, we're talking about different.
Yeah.
Different problems for humans in our area. This time of the year especially, is this more prevalent of a problem for rattlesnake bites or no?
You know, that comes and goes too. Another wild animal, and there's prevention for it, and I don't have the statistics on that. That's just, you know, that's, again, if there's sometimes there are surges in growths in rattlesnakes, it usually corresponds with you know, increased numbers of rodents, and then the snake population will follow afterwards and such things. I haven't heard any large reports on that.
You ever hear of a rattlesnake getting rabies? Is that possible?
I don't think so in reptilians. Yeah. So that's a reptilians now. Now, reptilians do have diseases on their skin.
Okay.
So a lot of times, like, viruses are very specific. They like the rabies virus likes mammals.
Gotcha.
So I don't think so. I can't say off the top of my head. So I'm not a zoologist or whatever, and I can't say confirm that, or an entomologist either. But on that, I would say no. But reptiles do have their own unique type of bacteria and viruses. They do get sick. Same thing. I know iguanas, when you handle them, you need to wash your hands. It's usually salmonella off iguanas and reptile stuff. And the salmonella is usually more on the scales and stuff like that.
Anything about frogs or toads? That we should be...
That I know of, no.
Yeah.
Not usually on the frogs and toads, usually, no. I'm sure they probably have something, but they're usually pretty safe to handle, so...
We're fairly fortunate living in this area.
We are.
Compared to other places in the
country. We are. You know, as much as mosquitoes and such things, you have Lyme disease back on the East Coast, you know, that really hides and causes a lot of problems. You have a lot more biting at... Where it's a lot greener and wetter, you have a lot more things. So the desert does protect us on a lot of stuff. You know, so we just like the old West, we got to deal with rabies and some biting mosquitoes. But when it comes to it, we are pretty fortunate because of our environment. You know, we don't have a whole lot. So, yeah.
Speaking of the fogging, we just recently had, and because this is going to air this Saturday and 2 weeks later too, we recently had a fogging operation. That took place over in Mojave Valley. One last thing on that. How often do you go back there?
So it's really, that is reactive. One, either based on complaints, the number of people that call us and they complain. So then we usually get it from the same area. So then we know in that area, and we usually kind of know by now. Or we set up traps. We're always setting up traps strategically in Mojave Valley in certain areas and identify. And anytime we see a larger quantity, then we will automatically trigger a fogging. So it's nothing that's normally scheduled, like it happens every week. It's done when we find an increased population. So,
all right. We've got about 30 seconds. Anything you want to add at all to close things off today?
Just always be aware. You know, this is a thing that we always take care of yourself, take care of your animals. Stay safe, stay healthy. Eat a well-balanced meal, you know, and just take care of yourself and your family. So,
yeah. All right.
All right, great.
Dr. Chad Kingsley, and we've been talking here on To Your Health. And we'll be back again with a repeat of the show in 2 weeks. And then next month, we'll be back with a new show as well. Thank you again.
Thank you.
To Your Health with Dr. Chad Kingsley, Mojave County Public Health Director, and Roger Galloway. Be healthy. Stay healthy. Here's To Your Health.